Hello, Libra, and welcome to Reckoning for the Faithful, your 2025 reading from Spring Reading from Planet Waves. I'm Eric Francis, your astrologer, here with some information about one of the most extraordinary times in astrological history that I have ever seen as an astrologer in real time, or studied as an astrologer who is very much enamored of the history of astrology when plotted out against the events of history. And right, that's a great way to learn astrology, is to do the astrology of historical events and times in history. And what we've got now is really unusual. This is coming. And I will tell you a bit about it in a moment. But first, I want to say that we are alive in an extraordinarily unusual, and I think for humanity in total, a dangerous time that nobody really wants to talk about. Nobody wants to be seen as being anti-technology, and then you've got a lot of people who are into technology, and they are more or less clueless, because they're high as a kite on the technological environment that they're in, and really have no way to see what's going on with any context in history or hindsight. They do not necessarily know the history of these waves and waves of technological advancement that have kind of stormed humanity since the late 19th century, as the electrical age has kind of grown up and dawned upon us, and then it's just been one thing after the next. And I think what people tend to believe is that, you know, everything that comes along is just some other, device. So, like, you know, one day a mouse looks like this, it has a tail, and then one day a mouse looks like this, it's very sleek, and it has no tail. You might be wondering, like, why do I have one of these on my desk and even plugged in? That's because the battery's run out on the powered mouse. And so it's like, that's just one small example of the way that the layers and layers of technology build up. But what the people who study technology and what the technologists themselves do not look at is the way that each wave of technological transformation transforms the experience of being human, together with people in intimate situations, and it transforms what we experience in our social, that is to say, societal situations, to the point now where we are being run basically completely out of control. Most people are, to some extent, run ragged and can barely sleep. And I assert that almost everything that we are dealing with now, every problem that we think we have, every situation that we think we might be in, every crisis and relationship that we might think that we're in, all of it is a response to coping with, dealing with, staying above water in the digital environment. And this, trust me, is not the digital environment of, like, internet cafes. Oh, there's a computer in daddy's office. The computer in daddy's office is much like the computer today as the telephone hanging on the wall that you would dial is to the iPhone. There's no comparison between them. And right now we are being completely overrun with yet another wave of technology, which is the infusion of some form of an artificial intelligence device into every function of government, commerce, industry, and travel. And, you know, once again, people don't have the hindsight really to look back and say, hey, what exactly was that that happened? Like, what was the problem that was created by, like, putting TVs all over the place? What was created by wiring the whole planet with electricity and turning night to day. There's absolutely no discussion of that, and there really has never been one, except in in the pages of my personal favorite philosopher, Marshall McLuhan, who spent his entire career analyzing and looking at, in practical terms, meaning in reality, what each of these changes brought to society. And so I've been saying in these readings that this is the spiritual crisis that humans are creating. And by a spiritual crisis, I mean a crisis of existence and a level of threat. I mean, there is actually a threat involved here in having what amount to sentient machines that can basically think and do and create whatever they want, and they can communicate with each other over networks that can reprogram themselves. They can essentially transform themselves into anything. What it means to be completely surrounded by these. And I realize that basically, next to nobody cares. I'm hoping that you're getting my point, and I'm going to explain to you why in astrology this is so crucial for you, and why now is such a crucial turning point for you. What exactly it is about the combination of your astrology and of this moment that are aligning to create a very, very, very special, unusual moment. But what I did is I just opened a window, and the cold air of the real world is turning my headlights on. So hold on a second, and I'll be right back. Okay, I have added a scarf to my ensemble. I thought I was going to let a little bit of fresh air in, and turned out I let a lot of fresh air in. Okay, so that all said, part of what I'm getting at here is an acknowledgement of how challenging the times are. And if we don't notice that, if we don't think that things are completely overwhelming and running out of control, it's like that old expression goes, the water got hot so slowly you didn't know when to scream. Well, there are a lot of people who want to scream. It is very, very hard to keep up in this environment that seems to multiply work. It seems to multiply communication transactions, whereas it used to take a postcard or a phone call to make a lunch date, maybe you'd confirm. Now there's like 50 emails generated for a lunch date. Not to mention the digital paper trail that's involved for a mere lunch date. Running the Smithsonian Institution, but I guess that won't be a problem anymore, because they're probably going to close it down and sell the dinosaur bones to the highest bidder. So I suggest that you notice the intensity with which the world is coming at you, and cut yourself a little break in terms of noticing the overwhelming number of transactions that that you are involved with on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour basis. It is a ridiculous number of events, I call them transactions, that are going on. Now, that said, there is for you going to be a radical shift in this environment, and that is coming up on you soon. Although the first wave of this shift is going to be a little bit difficult to perceive, and I'll get to that in about a half a blink of an eye. But over the course of the next approximately 12 months, everything around you will in some way be different. Now, I'm not saying that to be ominous. I'm saying that to say that the environment is changing, and the fact that the environment is changing means that your environment is changing, but it's the angle of approach that's going to make this so obvious to you. And the beauty of this is that it gives you a lot of material to work with. You're going to have opportunities in this if you are willing to go with the changes and experience essentially change as change is a requirement for progress. They put a little too much pokey sauce on my fish a moment ago, and I am needing to stay hydrated. All right, so let's take a look at your chart. Welcome to the first inset chart for a Libra reading in the history of planet waves. So in the chart for Libra, here is Libra. This is house one, or place one, and it is a reference point. What is called place one is always a reference point. In a natal chart, it's the degree rising at the time of your birth called the rising sign. But there's a lot of ways to organize, like to recycle the natal chart to be able to come up with different ascendants based on different context, various progressions and Arabic parts and so forth and so on. So for all purposes for this reading, place number one is Libra. And if place number one is Libra, place number seven is Aries. And so if you imagine the chart as being like a here's a little stick figure with you. This is like kind of the ground you're standing on, the horizon. What you experience over in this house is your environment generally. It can be characterized as the world you see when you walk around, wherever it is that you happen to walk around the world. So I know all the different houses represent environments, but the seventh I have come to think of over time as the environment generally that you experience. The seventh in textbooks is going to talk about, astrology books is going to talk about, where are we? Ah, here, I've turned the, we flip the screen and screen monitor. The seventh is going to be defined in astrology books as your relationship to partners, whether they're business partners or personal partners, whatever kind of partners they may be, and also relationships generally. But from there, for me, it was a short step to relationships are such an important part of the environment. We're really talking about the environment of relationships and therefore the environment generally. So that's how I came to the seventh being the perceivable environment generally, but we get specifics when we have questions about the different houses. We go far away, up in the 11th house, we travel locally, down in the third house, and so we travel in dreams in the 12th house. So all the houses represent environments. But mostly today, I'm going to be talking about the seventh place. And then also very important is the sixth place. And this is the environment of work, generally. It is the work that you do on a daily basis. It's where you physically go to work. And it also represents certain services that are associated with things like healing, like doctor's offices and massage therapist offices, acupuncture, herbalist's offices. The astrology office, for example, would be a sixth house place, assuming that the astrologer met with his clients. But for the astrologer, their work environment will be a sixth house environment. So that's the sixth. And the reason that I'm highlighting these two environments is, from this handwritten, these were my handwritten notes for the awakening. It doesn't really look like there's so much going on in there, but when you overlay that with an actual more complete picture of the planets, you see that there actually is quite a bit going on in there. And that before long, your seventh house is going to have all of this going on in it, and your sixth house is going to have all of this going on in it. That's before long. Right now, as of March 21st, it looks a little bit more like this, where the sun on March, what day is this? Well, it's the vernal equinox of 2020. It's upcoming vernal equinox. There will be the Sun in Aries and Venus retrograde and Mercury retrograde in Aries. And the conjunction of Chiron and Eris, which is a very big thing for you, is forming. And then Neptune is heading into Aries and Saturn is heading into Aries. And so the general direction of travel is Aries. And what Aries is for you is the environment generally. But there's also something that I've observed, and I can't tell you that Rob Hand would agree with me, or Melanie Reinhart would agree with me, or any other astrologer, but because I am a student of not only the history of media, but the history of media's transformation of the human experience and what it means to be a self, which is exactly the thing that astrology is looking at. So I was at least successful in convincing. It didn't take much. I had my thoughts together, convincing the McLuhan family in the form of Eric Marshall's son and Andrew Marshall's grandson that astrology is a form of environmental study. We are studying the human environment. The way that you know it's the human environment is that it's invisible until you put it on a chart and like, oh, there it is. Wow, there actually is something there. And I've seen over and over again from looking at a vast number of charts that what I call the crime scene of the electronic environment, the electrical and electronic environment, and we're now pushing 200 years from telegraph starting in 1844. It's 175 years more than 175 years later. We're only 19 years short of two centuries of this rising tide of electricity. I mean, electricity was so heady that it took somebody the likes of Benjamin Franklin to first figure it out. So he invented the battery and the terms anode and cathode and the word electrician and all of that. Ben Franklin was no slouch. And so he's really the first electrician. Think about the brilliance of someone who's like a Franklin stature. But what he wasn't looking at, and what really basically almost no one, even to this day, is looking at, is the way that these technological advances completely transform what people think we are and how we relate to one another. So when I suggest that the crime scene of the digital environment and the thing being stolen is our souls, basically, is in Aries, well, I have a lot of charts to back that up, and it means that your relationship and house of the environment generally is directly involved in this. It is directly involved in this. And so these houses here, the sixth to some extent, but especially seven and eight, are like this portal into the chart where there is just like, things are coming in constantly. It's not just a house of relating to people. There's these wide openings where there is this onrush coming in from the west, the direction of the setting sun. The sun sets in the seventh house. That's the only place the sun can set, is in the seventh house. And so when we have an astrological advance like this in your house of environment generally and relationships generally, whether friendly, intimate, or partnership, three general types of relationships, open, enemy, and loving relationships and partnerships, business relationships and partnerships, and open enemies all enter through the seventh. And then your seventh is soon going to look like this. Boy, howdy, as they say. That's a lot. And it's important to recognize that there's plenty still going on in the sixth. Although in this particular figure, set for March of 2026. All but one of these points, that one being Nessus, are quick moving and they're going to be out of the way. But when they will have moved on within a couple of months or so, most of them. And all of them within a couple of months, except for Nessus. And that's an important player in astrology. Okay, so how do you handle this? Well, it is important to have an inventory of what you want to change in your life, because the winds of change are going to be upon you. This is nothing if not the winds of change, right? This is what it looks like in astrology. This is hello. Introducing, here we go, introducing the winds of change, blowing at full gust. And the first of the winds of change is going to be this. Now we're back to 2025 here. The first of them is going to, let's put this chart in a way we can see it. The first planet to make its way across your seventh house cusp and to say, okay, things are different now, that is going to be Neptune. I'm not at this moment really talking about these quick movers, but Neptune is going to creep up on you, because that's what Neptune does. Neptune rises slowly like floodwaters. But before I elaborate on that too much, let's talk about the presence of all of this inner planet activity going on quite strongly and compellingly in your seventh and also your sixth house right now. The way that this looks is, let's clear this away, is that, I've drawn in Venus retrograde here. We could add another, it's going to be of a similar color, but we could add another layer for Mercury retrograde here. So Venus retrograde and Mercury retrograde are, you might say, warming up your seventh house cusp. What they're doing is they're giving you a sense of the territory that you will soon be exploring in much deeper and long-lasting ways with slow-moving objects like Saturn and Neptune. So it is so perfect as to seem orchestrated. It seems coordinated. I mean, and that's the crazy thing about astrology, is that it's supposed to be totally random, but then like it starts to really seem like it's coordinated, and like one event is leading forward to another and preparing us for the next stage. And the next stage is quick movers coming through the territory and moving on, and then very slow movers moving into the territory and staying there for a while. So in the case of Saturn, that's going to be for most 25, 26, and 27. So really, by the end of 27, Saturn is starting to move into Taurus. It will enter, by the way, with Chiron. It's a little bit quicker moving. Neptune, meanwhile, enters Aries for the first time on March 30th. That's just in 3 weeks. And it has its... It enters, as often happens with an outer planet transit, with some real fanfare. The fanfare is a total solar eclipse at 9 degrees of Aries. So you are probably feeling like there is a lot happening. And if you're feeling like there's a lot happening, you're right. There is a lot happening. And there are a couple of keys to coping with this much activity. One of them is to use time to your advantage and to try not to feel so rushed. Anything you can do besides just randomly skipping deadlines is to try not to feel so rushed. The second thing is to be situationally aware at all times, and I take the widest possible view of the concept of situational awareness and of the situation, right? That you could say the seventh is the situation. And finally, to know what you want to change. Know what you want to change. There are probably a lot of things that you want to change. And if you know what you want to change, then the opportunities for change are going to seem much more well-placed. They're going to seem much more reasonable. They're going to seem like they belong there. They're going to seem more useful rather than daunting. This is the way to use the information that is coming from this astrology that is, giving you timing hints. And so really we're looking at an approximately from today, assuming you're receiving this in mid-March sometime, a time frame of about through May or June of 2026, when a whole new set of circumstances starts to take over. And this is significant for you in many ways also. One of those is that in June of 2026, and I've got it written here, Jupiter makes its way into Cancer through your 10th house. And really, transits do not get better than that. And so one of the things we can say for sure is, first of all, the environment that you're in is basically kaleidoscopic. And I would add to the short list of things, to tools you can use to handle this, is when things get this kaleidoscopic, it is very helpful to use the tool of pattern recognition. And rather than trying to understand every one thing at a time, oh my God, what does that mean? What does that mean? Oh, there's that. Oh, what does that mean? What could that possibly, et cetera, et cetera. Spot patterns. And we could say for sure that one of the patterns that we're spotting is this, there will continue to be a very rapid ramping up of the flow of events, of the pace of events. And therefore, you're going to have to adapt to that one way or the other. You will either have to increase your vibration, slow your vibration down, make decisions to simplify. There will be opportunities to make decisions to simplify. Those will come in the form of Saturn's transit across Aries, which again, it begins in around May, and that will continue for 2.5 years after that. Saturn is always an influence that will help you winnow things down, that will help you, sort out what you want from what you need, and sort things out generally. Neptune, so there's a kind of a paring down quality and a limiting quality that you can use when you tap into the properties of Saturn, and that may mean bringing certain situations to a close or consciously transforming those situations. But there are going to be things you probably already know what they are, things that you want to bring to a close. Well, you will have your opportunity to bring them to a close. But the contravening factor is that Neptune is coming in, and what into the same territory, and it's coming in first. And the influence of Neptune is to create an opening. So Neptune, in addition to these angles of the chart being these kind of intake ducts in the chart, Neptune, wherever it goes, creates a kind of an intake duct, and where it's about to go is this very, very sensitive territory. And I would remind you that this sensitive territory of the seventh place is not the seventh place when you were born. It's not. I mean, there was computer dating in the 1970s, but it was so rudimentary and so ridiculous that it wasn't really a thing. It was more of a joke. Now, maybe a couple of people found their partner, but it is not like the completely robotized, instantaneous, massive public relations experience that we have today. Young people using these dating apps, but even older people are using apps that are owned by the same company. Match, whatever, Match.com basically owns all these Tinder and Grindr and all these things. It's just sorted out to be more marketing specific for different age ranges. But this has basically taken over the entire environment of meeting people. And it's even taken over the environment of meeting people when you meet people in person. Because when you meet them in person, there is coming along with that all of the transformation of the people of experience here floating around as phantoms in the digital plane. But it beams back down to the planet with them, and in a sense, you never fully beam in. Once you've been beamed back up to the astral plane, where we are right now, you never fully materialize in human form quite the same way again. Which is why walking around in the world in human form, you are basically walking around in a kind of a analog of the internet. And this is not easy. It's not easy. Look, I don't know about you, but I am I'm a sensuous person, and I like watching the way a woman walks across the floor or down the street or whatever. I would sit in Paris and write horoscopes in outdoor cafes, and for the sheer sensual pleasure of it, would watch these beautiful European women stroll down the street just for the pleasure of watching it. That's how you get my attention. That is a very, very different world than swiping left and swiping right based on what is probably a retouched photo of the person placed on placed on a robot. So the entire dimension of the seventh house has been transformed by the robot. So one of the things that you will get to do is you will see this through a diversity of different filters. So one of the ways to think of planets through the seventh house is a filter through which you perceive your existence. It's almost as if the seventh house is a stage, and the planets going by on the stage represent both factors of the background, like backdrops and scenery and set pieces, and also represent the actors themselves who are on that stage. And a planet like Neptune is likely to represent a general change of cast. It's interesting that the word is the same, but it's almost like changing the tone of the lights or changing the tone of the music in the background or in the foreground if the orchestra is playing something obvious. And Saturn is more like the set crew that comes and rearranges the set. And this is all going to be going on at the same time. It's like the lighting director wrote a series of lighting cues and then changing the lighting so that you're watching the lighting change while the set crew is rearranging the set. The lighting cues, those are Neptune, and the set change cues, those, and the physical objects moving around, those are Saturn. The summary of this, for the sake of a succinct thing you could write down, is you will be noticing changes in partners, in partnerships, and in the relationship of you to all of them and to all of that. And you have to take this all as a positive. I mean, that you are going to have a lot of opportunities here, but the best thing about it is that, you know, humans find it very difficult to make changes without leverage. They find it difficult to make changes without environmental factors precipitating those changes. And frankly, there's too much change as it is. So I don't blame anyone for wanting to kind of stay put and stay where they are and not have to constantly be on the run and on the move. And you know, as the tide of electricity has risen throughout the course mostly of the 20th century and into the 21st, the rate of change has become not only faster, but blindingly fast and less meaningful to anything vaguely connected to any form of fulfillment or any form of, you know, a sense of contentment and a sense of belonging. And, you know, quite honestly, very little has gotten better in our lifetimes. The only thing that's gotten better is the technology environment. And everything else just seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. And we're having to cope with it. And the technology is almost like it's kind of a drug that keeps us distracted from all the things that we really, really need to change. And so what I'm saying is that you are getting hints from your environment right now about things that you want to change, you need to change, and where change is inevitable. And those are coming initially in the form of these quick planets retrograding back and forth over. So the wonderful part of this astrology is that you are being made alert and being shown options. You will continue to have an increasing number of options. But this is why it is absolutely vital that you know what you want to get rid of, what you're no longer interested in, and what you want to develop, what you want to have. Because this way, when you are presented with an opportunity for change, and even if that's some form of an enforced change, you'll have a basis for making a choice. And say, well, I've thought about that. If I have to move from where I am now, I don't want to go deeper into a city. I want to move out to a rural area. That's it. When the time comes to move, you already made your mind up. You're heading out. You're heading out to the country. You're not heading deeper into the city, or whatever that change may be. It may be in the opposite direction. And this would include matters of work are going to be very important, particularly with all of this stuff in the sixth, and matters of partnership. Now, matters of partnership generally are under very, very difficult times. The internet has transformed people to the degree where it is almost impossible to establish trust. Without the establishment of trust, people are highly reluctant to disclose who they are. And so, as far as I can tell, there are quite a few intimate situations where people are kind of registered partners, including parenting children, or in some way married, or in the result of various, let's say, commitment ceremonies, where the people don't really know very much about one another. And because there are so many distractions, there may be a feeling of like, well, I don't really, who's this person? I just live with them. Why do I really need to know them so well? They are who they are. I am who I am. It is what it is. Well, if that in any way describes you, like 1% or like 80%. All right, let's talk about one more thing. A big one. This conjunction right here. This is the third iteration of this conjunction. This is the March 19th, 2026 version of this conjunction, but it is coming in May. And then in October, there's going to be three. Chiron's going to go there, there, there. So this is number three. So the first one's coming up in late May, and then the second one in October, and the third one in March of 26. This one is a lot going on in Aries, and Aries is what's called angular for you. It is an angular house. It means it basically is you. Okay, so continuing. One of the challenges that we face as participants of the electric society is that we have had our inner being, our private inner sanctum, has been removed from who we are. Our sense of, I'm looking for a little hanky, our sense of the private interior self is practically gone. This starts to happen the minute they turn the electric on for the first time. For example, you can see inside people's homes. Everything about electricity eviscerates privacy. And we have, particularly since the 1920s, when Eris entered Aries, had our sense of privacy, the mere concept of privacy, our experience of privacy, taken away to the point where most people don't know what it is. They have no concept of their inner sanctum, and they have no concept of a thought that they may think in their mind that other people are not going to like upvote, downvote, comment on in some way. And this has to do with the tribal factor of electricity. Electricity turns people into tribal beings, something we haven't really been since like the time well, tribal beings painted that page, but there were shaman among them, that page, that painting, that cave, Lascaux. There were shaman among them who most certainly were distinct individuals who spent a lot of time down in that cave system. There are something like 300 paintings down there. That's I have more photos in my studio, but 300 paintings for 17,000 years ago? Chiron. Chiron's also in your seventh house now. That began in 2018, 2019, by the way. That was the phase in. I ask you, what happened in 2018, 2019? What was the transformation of 2018, 2019? What did you experience in those years and in certain subsequent years? That's when Chiron entered Aries. Chiron is an individuating factor. So Eris is a tribalizing factor. Chiron is an individuating factor. Chiron guides you back into your inner being. It also presents a kind of a test of clarity of your relationships. It is the ultimate kind of investigator. But the thing that's being investigated is you and your interplay, your interaction with your relationships. You are being, in a sense, provoked to a more profound state of your own individuality, and you're being called back from your tribal state. Well, if you're called back from your tribal state, that's going to change every relationship you are in, to the extent those relationships are also part of some tribal state. So if your partner or best friend is a tribal being, and then you are going through this like deep transformation into being, going back to being an individual, well, that's a lot. That's really, really, really important. And so it's going to shift the nature of your relationships. But if you know what's going on, it is much, much easier. Not necessarily a lot easier, but you don't have to be stupefied by like, oh my God, I don't understand anything. You can say, well, I don't know, this crazy astrologer who reads this, even crazier philosopher named Marshall McLuhan, who spent his whole life thinking about what is a car tire? You know, what is a typewriter? What is a scroll? You know, what does a radio do? What does a typewriter do? This is what Marshall McLuhan spent his time thinking about when he wasn't teaching Shakespeare. Well, we know that the electrical environment eviscerates the private self. You may safely assume that the relationship that you have been having with important people in your life has come from either a non-existent private self or a deeply compromised private self. A deeply compromised private self. And so if you start to reawaken, if your inner being starts to reawaken, well, that kind of changes everything. It changes your relationship to everything and everyone, because suddenly you're looking from a distinct inner, like imagine like there's a kind of core that you have, and usually your core is kind of dancing around outside of you, and then all of a sudden one day your core is going to go straight through you, if only for a moment, and then you're going to be like, oh, that's what I've been missing. That's, oh, when I see things as me, that's what that means. Because to be a tribal being means, first of all, to not be you. You can't really be you in a tribal situation. You cannot. There are not individuals in tribal situations. There's the chief, there's the chief's daughter, there's the medicine man. There's your basic individuals in a tribe. Everybody else is just a member of the tribe. People love this shit. Well, and they love it because, yeah, you didn't ask me why they love it, but I'll tell you why they love it. They love it because they can pretend to not take any responsibility for anything. After all, the tribe did it. Oh, that's not me. That's just the tribe doing its thing. When you're the chief or when you're the shaman, you better know what you're talking about because you're the one leading the tribe. So you better come from a space of an interior reality. And so what is happening here is that among many other factors, and I think that really the dominant factor in the environment involves the Chiron-Eris conjunction. Like, that's very much the heart of the matter, is the Chiron-Eris conjunction. In terms of its rarity, first of all, equally rare. So that's no issue there, right? Rare means more meaningful in astrology. Less frequent means more meaningful. And I'm reluctant to use the word powerful. It's powerful, but it's more influential. The less something happens, and these are inherently influential entities, talking about broad sweeping times in history, broad sweeping important times in history. Ah, well, now they're lining up. They're lining up for the first time since 1972. In Aries, they're lining up for the first time since like 1480. Really rare. And the net effect is going to be to pull focus on your inner awareness. But the focus being pulled on your inner awareness is going to manifest in very palpable ways in your environment, as if your shift in consciousness shifts everything and everyone with whom you have any quantum entanglement, which is kind of what a relationship is, a kind of a quantum entanglement. And so it looks like the change is happening outside you. It is absolutely not happening outside you, but it is positioned in such a way that you will get to explore and express and experience it in the context of your environment, in the context of your relationships. Let's talk about Jupiter. So every 12 years, Jupiter gets to Cancer, and Cancer is the 10th place of Libra, and that's fantastic. In the midst of all of this, a lot of wondering, like, wow, how am I keeping up? However will I keep up? How can I stand so much change? There's even a total eclipse coming on March 29th in the middle of it, which is kind of an accelerant, right? The solar eclipse is an accelerant. Okay, all that going on here. Ah, but then Jupiter comes and it's like, oh, there's a goal involved. There's a reward involved. There's some form of, if not a destination, an interesting place to arrive involved. That's a beautiful thing. And what else here? What else here? So we've got that angle covered. It's kind of likely that the next 7-year phase of your life is going to involve a lot of travel, getting around. Uranus enters your 9th place. And so that starts to happen over the summer. And it's the thing that'll present you with options. But the other thing about the 9th house is using ideas as kind of like as playmates. There's only like one or two other philosophers I even like, much less love, as much as I love my spiritual grandfather, Marshall McLuhan. But Let's just say that Uranus in Gemini in the ninth house is very McLuhan-esque. It's someone who is, it's a set of ideas that are going to take you to the roots of the concept of an idea itself that will be palpable in your relationships, where there will be a something to talk about, something to talk about. And Uranus brings in groups. So if you've been feeling a little bit lonely, hang in there. And I would say that, you know, as Thaddeus Gola said, love as much as you can from wherever you are. So from whatever position you're in, you just love what there is to love. And I would say that that love will at least be fulfilling in its own right. And that it's not going to be long before you start to connect with other people and other opportunities with the infusion of a good few other places as the next couple of years, you know, moves along. Yep. Okay, I'll leave you on one last note. One of the ways you know that you belong with someone is you speak the same language. And that could be body language. It could be verbal language. It could be written language. But I would say that a good relationship is one where you can have a good conversation. And you don't need somebody to be the love of your life all the time. And you don't need all these false concepts of permanence and so forth. But what you need is someone, people generally, and groups of people where you can express yourself freely, where you feel understood, and where you have a sense that what other people are saying is comprehensible. So there. Logos. Logos in Libra. Maki Maki in Libra. Back to the deeper origins. All right. On those notes, I will leave you. There is, of course, much more to say. I have already said much of it in The Awakening, the 2025 annual edition. We know you all haven't acquired that. It is worth it. It is I've done half a lifetime now of astrological writing. I started this 30 years ago. I started as an astrological writer in the spring of 1995. And I did my best work in late 2024 writing The Awakening and The Awa. The book that comes along with it. So an extensive, juicy Libra's reading was absolutely gorgeous, where I delineate the planets that are in Libra and look at all of this astrology in a more compact and contained way, in the way that writing is a little bit less spontaneous than this kind of presentation. They're both necessary, they're both fun, but The Awakening awaits you. And if you've already got it, I would say, well worth printing it out. We put it on a PDF, print it out, and read it again. And bring one of these along with you so that you can mark it up, cross out all the shit you don't like. If you find something you like, write more about it in the margins and make it your own. My message of astrology generally is make it your own. Do it your way. We sell a lot of those chart sets. You might have one. Always leave blank wheels in the set so you can do something with it on your own terms, starting from a blank wheel. All right, on that note, I leave you. Please send my love to your cats, your dogs, and your donkeys. Francis of Kingston, lots of love, and